All right, here we go. Good morning, glory, hallelujah to you, and welcome to another episode of Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always by Uncle Salty himself, John Mariano. How are you doing tonight, John?
I'm fine.
Okay, good.
F-I-N-E, fine.
Oh, perfect. Fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional?
You got it.
Awesome. Joining us as always, the one and only Scott Haskins. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm full of all the energy that John doesn't have.
Excellent. You'll be the raging yin to his calming yang. And yes. Just to muck up the panel a little bit more, we're bringing him back. Even though he put, I don't want to lick your thing on his dice and we had to cover it here on this show, it's our good buddy, Jeff Saunders. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, guys. Can we do that song again? I thought of a whole bunch of other reasons to love it since last time.
You know, there is a live version that we have to cover on the show, at least one. There might actually be two. So there is an opportunity to do that song again.
Can we add that to the dice tonight?
Not tonight. We got something special in store for the dice tonight, and it all revolves around our good friend Jeff Saunders and a special little initiative that he takes part in every year. So now, Jeff, I yield the floor to you. Please tell us all about St. Baldrick's.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Corey. Thank you guys for having me on. This time of the year, we really dive in and try to help the St. Baldrick's Foundation raise money for childhood cancer research. And this is a charity organization, and that's really their sole purpose is to help us find better treatments and better cures for all the different childhood cancers out there. And we try to do this in a fun way. It's a very serious topic. And there's a lot of negativity with the topic, but we try to bring a lot of fun and joy to it. And one of the ways we do that is we kind of culminate our fundraising efforts with these head shave events. And, I will actually be cutting off, all of my locks, here, on March, 3rd. I'll cut half of it off, and on March 4th, I'm cutting the other half off, and we're going to have a couple of parties where we do that, and it'll be a really good time. And it's a way that we show support and solidarity with all these kids and young folks who are going through treatment, because you know, they don't really have a choice in losing their hair. So we get to show them some support, and they get a real kick out of seeing us do it.
It's always a lot of fun. I know, Jeff, you've live streamed a couple of these, and you'd actually take donations on the air and actually dye your hair certain colors. Yeah. I know my 10-year-old watching the last one was like, Dad, he's $50 away from purple. We got to donate. So Jeff will dye his hair a different shade. So we made sure to throw in an extra $50. But absolutely a worthwhile cause. Maybe let the folks know how they can help support you in your fight against childhood cancer.
Sure. So the easiest thing to do is just to go to stbaldricks.org. If you want to specifically support me or my team, there's a little search box there, and you can type in Shaving Lives. That's our team's name. And it'll bring up our team, Shaving Lives 2023. And you can go to our page that way, or you can donate just right there on the stbaldricks.org homepage. All the money donated goes to the same place. It's all used for the same purposes. You can also, if you're wanting to get involved, type in your hometown in that search engine, and it'll bring up any local events or local teams in your area. And this time of the year, as we get close to St. Paddy's Day, there are events pretty much everywhere. Foundation had its first shave event on St. Patrick's Day back in, I don't know. It's been about 18 or 20 years ago, but they had their first event on St. Patrick's Day. So usually that's when a lot of the St. Baldrick's shave events take place.
Everyone should go out there and support Jeff, support St. Baldrick's, and support the fight against children's cancer. Now, coming back to this show, because Jeff wanted to come on the show and talk about state politics, but he wanted to listen to some tunes too. And so John had a really cool idea about what we're going to do with tonight's dice. Maybe tell us about that, John.
Yeah. Jeff was struggling to find a tie-in for Aerosmith with his incredible cause. And, Tom Hamilton is a cancer survivor. So I suggested we find some Tom Hamilton songs, and we load up the dice, and we celebrate Tom continuing to win his fight, and it's not something where you win and you finally win. It's something you're continuously battling, and he's winning the fight right now, and I think it's a good way for us to tie these two ideas together. We recorded a show last night and we did it for the kids, but Corey already broke the cardinal rule when I said F-I-N-E fine. He didn't say effed up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. He said fucked up. And because Corey cursed, that's giving me a green light now. So no. I'm going to say it tonight.
We
fuck cancer.
You owe $20 in the swear jar. I owe 10.
Yeah, and I'm gonna say yes. I 100% agree with your sentiment. But I suggested when we were recording the other show that we have a swear jar and donate the money to St. Baldrick's. So I'm still on board with that idea.
I have a jar full of some kind of clear liquid I will be imbibing in during the show. So if I empty this out, by all means, we can start to fill it with something else.
That is pure moonshine, folks. Big time moonshine. All right. So as John alluded to, of course, in honor of Tom Hamilton, who has suffered with a throat and tongue cancer a couple of times, he was in remission. The cancer returned in 2011. He's now cancer-free. We thought we're going to pick six Tom Hamilton songs and put them on the die. And John, in his infinite wisdom, did research and said, Tom Hamilton has 7 writing credits with Aerosmith and gave us 6 of them to put on the dice. I just did a simple Google search before we started recording and found he actually has 16 writing credits on different Aerosmith songs. So hand down. I'm not done.
You're done for a minute because we have 3 hosts of the show, my friend. And I just want to ask Scott one question because Scott hasn't chimed in a while. Scott, who in their right mind would put me in charge of research?
Well, that's a fair point. I mean, I'm sorry, Corey, but if you don't babysit the kids and the kids fill the dishwasher with soap and then turn it on and you come home and your whole house is filled with bubbly, sudsy liquid, who do you blame?
Too soon, but, Scott. My dishwasher just blew up. That's too soon. That's out of bounds.
But don't blame the chimp.
But on John's behalf, he found almost half of them.
Almost half, yeah. So we should be proud of him, I guess, for that fact.
And he didn't fill the kitchen with bubbles. So he's okay to this week.
That's right. I did change a couple of them, though, because we had doubled up on a couple because John, like I said, my fault, I put him in charge of research. So let's recap the 6 songs of Tom Hamilton's that we put on the die. 2 of them are from Music from Another Dimension because he actually has 5 writing credits on that album. Originally, we had Lover a Lot on the dice. That was one John wanted on there, but I changed it to Up on the Mountain from the same album because Tom Hamilton actually provides lead vocals on that song. So I thought that would be kind of cool. It's actually a bonus track on the deluxe version of Music from Another Dimension. The other Music from Another Dimension song we have on there tonight is Can't Stop Loving You, which was one of the singles from that album. We also have the studio version of Sweet Emotion, which I think is probably Tom Hamilton's most famous song with Aerosmith. We also have Uncle Salty, which is kind of appropriate for John Mariano being on the call. Critical Mass from Draw the Line and a live version of Janie's Got a Gun. And this one's interesting because Scott Haskin, not a fan of Janie's Got a Gun.
Well, I mean, I'll give our guests the opportunity, being as I'm the most West Coast member of the panel. I don't know that that actually has anything to do with anything. But if he wanted to replace Janie's Got a Gun with any version of the movie, I would be okay with that.
Wait, there's a movie about Janie's Got a Gun?
No, the song, the movie that everyone on this show loves but refuses to admit.
Is it a movie about Aerosmith?
No, it's the song, the movie from Permanent Vacation.
Oh, I quit doing movie trivia a long time ago, man.
It's a movie about a vacation. Chevy Chase is in it.
Oh. No, I don't know what year that came out.
Okay. Well, then we'll just skip that, and we'll maybe leave Janie's Got a Gun on there. Let's in the cellar, if you will. Scott Haskin, out of those six, what are you hoping to hear tonight?
All right. You know what? I'm in a good mood. I'm going to try and manifest to try and change my opinion on the song, because sometimes a live version will do that. Janie's Got a Gun.
All right. Janie's Got a Gun from A Little South of Sanity. John Mariano, is there any track in particular you're looking forward to?
I feel bad for Scott, because if ever a song was built for the studio and not a live version, it's Janie's Got a Gun. I am hopeful that we will get Sweet Emotion, because look, I want more people to listen to this episode. If you put that title out there, more people are going to listen to this episode.
Good call. Good call. Jeff, out of those six, I know you probably haven't heard a lot of them. Anything you're maybe looking forward to?
I don't want to miss a thing.
That's not on there. We already did that one. You already ruined our night one time with that.
Crap. I don't know. You know, I'm familiar with Sweet Emotion, and I'm familiar with Janie Got a Gun. Maybe one of the other ones that I haven't heard that much. Maybe the one that Todd sings on.
All right, his name is Tom, not Todd.
Tom.
Yeah, close enough. I'm going to go with that one too. Tom Hamilton co-wrote and sang on Up on the Mountain. I'm going to go for that one. So what do you say? Let's get Steven to warm up his pipes, and we'll toss this sucker. Toss of the And we are getting Janie's Got a Gun from A Little South of Sanity. All right. So Scott and John get their wish on this one. This is going to be a lot of fun, guys.
You know, I like what Jeff said about Sweet, or what John said about Sweet Emotion, but I think that this will also draw a lot of people, because this is a really well-known song.
Yeah, I agree. And sorry, I wasn't listening to John when he was talking. I thought he also picked Janie's. I forgot he picked Sweet Emotion, but it's going to accomplish the same thing. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that works. Well, and I'm going to go into this with an open mind and just see how I feel about this version of the song, forgetting how I loathe the studio version.
I'm just happy that we didn't roll the movie.
Me too. That would have been shocking, because it's not even on there. But before we play the song, we got to figure out, it's time to play my favorite game. How many times did Aerosmith play Janie's Got a Gun in their career? Remember, we do this Price is Right rules. You have to get closest to the actual number without going over. Let's start with John Mariano. John, what do you think? Without looking it up, how many times has Aerosmith played Janie's Got a Gun?
799.
All right. Good guess. Scott Haskin?
325.
Jeff Saunders?
801.
Ooh, 801. And Scott Haskin takes it, because two of you went over. The actual number, according to setlist.fm, 616 times.
Wow.
So John was technically closest, but he went over.
Right. Well, Price is Right rules, whether it's Drew Carey or Bob Barker.
That's right.
Always Bob Barker.
John has very, very, very big thoughts on Price is Right. Do not get him started.
Well, you'll have to see if they're shooting it here next time you want to come visit and see if you can get on the show.
Will Bob be there?
No, he's pretty retired.
Oh, disappointing.
Sorry.
Well, let's bring the show back up here. What do you say we play a little Janie's Got a Gun? Originally recorded and released in 1989, this is the version that came out on A Little South of Sanity, released October 20th, 1998.
Okay, I've heard this plenty of times live. This is the crispest and cleanest I've ever heard this. It's usually like a mumbly wumbly mess at the beginning of the song. Corey, what is going on with the production here? Why is the production value so high on this?
Jack Douglas, producer extraordinaire. He produced the first batch of Aerosmith records back in the 70s, and he produced this one too. This was recorded on the Nine Lives tour and the Get a Grip tour. I'm not sure which concert. Maybe I can look it up here. No, it doesn't say which tour this particular version came from. But obviously, both those tours, the band is firing on all cylinders. So the band sounds good, and like you said, the production is really top notch.
Yeah, I'm kind of blown away because every time I've heard this, it sounded like a wet fart at the top of the song, which kills it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm impressed.
What do you think, Scott? Just 26 seconds in here.
Well, I thought the water harp was kind of a weird way to start it off, and without knowing the transition of the previous song into this one in the actual show, it's hard to say. But so far, I would say the production is fantastic. I'll see where it goes. I feel like the vocals were a little weird, but I like what they did with it. Overall, it sounded good. Could this have been on the Permanent Vacation tour, 89?
No, because Pump came out is the album after. Pump came out 89.
Oh,
Permanent Vacation
came
out 87. So this was the next album after.
Ah, gotcha.
And I had seen them like late 90s or early, like before this album was released, I had seen them. And it sounded like junk next to what this is.
Okay, so you sound like Permanent Vacation tour.
No, because you said this was like Nine Lives tour.
Oh, you're talking but, when I thought you were talking when Pump came out, not when this album came out.
Oh no! I'm talking like I've seen, Jane's Got a Gun live.
So like Nine Lives
like,
tour.
Yeah, like fairly peak. Aerosmith, and the production was not this. It was very much like, they had drank too much the night before.
I think they were falling off the wagon on the Nine Lives tour, so that's entirely possible. Jeff, you're a big music historian. Did you like the water harp?
Now, what is a water harp?
Scott?
It's a metal, almost looks like... just like a bunch of blades of grass that are cascading down, and you drip water over it, and it gives you that really weird horror movie sound. It's very commonly used in horror movies. It's like metal scraping on metal.
Okay, I don't know that one. My people use a mouth harp sometimes.
Slightly different.
And also a harmonica. But this water harp, I don't know.
Those are more jovial instruments than a water harp. A water harp is meant to kind of make your spine cringe a little bit.
Okay.
And
mission accomplished.
Really, yeah, it's not really a jovial topic that they're singing about here with, a father abusing a daughter and then she kills him. Maybe like a jug band type sound wouldn't work for this type of song.
It depends on the perspective. I'm like happy that she found a way to buy a gun at her tender age. So I see more optimism in this song.
There you go. I'm going to look at this with a fresh set of eyes. Just again on the production, for all of us wearing headphones, like you get that stereo effect. You got Brad Whitford on the left side, kind of playing the main riff, and Joe's just kind of doing some little like harmonics and like, little slide stuff in there. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I really dig it. In fact, I was thinking they really didn't need the beginning of the song. They could have started with just an instrumental version of that first part of the verse and then gone into the verse. I love that heavy percussion. Those toms almost sound like timpani. They're that big in the mix. But I could kind of do without the whole intro, and it just started right there, and I think it would have been fine. What did her daddy do? I just realized part of why I don't like this song. And I think it was Jeff, our fantastic guest, that brought it to light. The music is too jovial for this subject matter for me. It's almost too happy for what he's singing about. And I kind of think also there's a little bit of irony to Steven Tyler singing lyrics about improper underage sex.
Obviously, what he did was very wrong, and that is going to go to trial here, assumingly quite soon, and there's no excusing what he did back in the 70s with that young lady. But can you separate that from what you're hearing here about a father abusing or raping a little girl?
Yeah, I can. I just found that almost more as a side note of irony, because I don't think that I don't think I'd put that together before. And nice Angel reference, by the way, Corey. Way to work in another song.
Well, you know, that's what I do. John?
Yeah, it's separating artists from art becomes very tough, especially because it feels like, you know, he was trying to make this his redemption arc, and history kind of tells a different story. But focusing more on the song and bringing it back to the song a little bit and taking it away from Steven a little bit, I never realized how prominent the bass line is in this song. And I'm listening to it closely because, you know, tonight we're here for a cause and we're here because of Tom Hamilton. And the bass line really is the backbone of the song if you listen to the through line throughout.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound of the bass is really great on this performance too.
Yeah. And I don't know what you, I'm hearing a raw band. I'm not hearing like they didn't like go in and touch anything up. Like, mm-hmm. like Steven has some imperfections in his vocal. It sounds like, I would think it sounded on the night. Like there's not a lot of work done to it after the fact.
Yeah. It really feels like almost like a soundboard series where they just recorded it in and then just mixed it. And that was it.
Yeah, because they just wanted to kind of wrap up their Geffen contract and get on Columbia again. So there may have been not a lot of like post production work done on this, which I kind of find refreshing. I'd rather hear the band as they sound, not super touched up a la Kiss on the Alive albums or anything like that.
That's such a common phrase for this time in music. We just wanted to wrap up our Geffen contract.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't be just me, but God is on the run. Tell me now it's untrue.
Now, I think there he sings he had a little bitty baby. On the studio version, he sings he jacked a little bitty baby. The original lyric was he raped a little bitty baby, but John Colander and the label convinced them to change it because they thought this song could be a potential hit.
Isn't jacked stolen, though?
Yeah. Can jacked mean other things? I don't know. I'm not very street. Jeff, you're from Texas. Well, what are the different, besides like jacking up your truck to change a tire, what are some other definitions?
For Jack, self-love.
Okay.
And more self-love.
I know we're going to the Texan here, but I gotta pull in some authority now. Jacked is like I jacked them up real bad, right? Like I messed them up. You know, it's you got jumped, you got beat up. It could be raped. It's a word, like Jeff said, it has multiple meanings, but even within multiple meanings, if you're taking it to the really terrible place of you rough somebody up, anything within a mugging, a rape, an assault, like that's where you're going with jacked up. Right. And if you want an example, if you go back to a film like Goodfellas, they call Joe Pesci a clown and he jacks that guy up, that's proper context for jacked up.
There you go.
You're fine with Jack being used in this context? Like, the theme of the song is about rape, but they kind of backed it off a little bit to Jack. Does that still carry the same kind of punch?
So if you wanted to talk about rape, you know, in, say, my parents' household, and the children's ears were within earshot, they would use a word like jacked.
Okay.
So just to give you an idea of when and where and how you might use that in the proper context. So being that this is going, you know, you're looking for a radio edit, something of that nature where kids may be listening, it gets the point across, especially if you listen to the rest of the words of the song, it's very clear what's going on.
Well, and the video too, directed by a young David Fincher, I think gets that point across quite well as well. Okay, so in terms of backups there, I think we have Joe on the Runaways singing backup to Steven, but I believe their keyboard player is singing kind of the higher stuff with Steven on the pay, like that kind of escalating scale they kind of run there. I think that because you hear Steven kind of stop early and catch his breath. I believe that's their keyboard player who's kind of carrying that through.
Yeah, and it sounds really good. I also like the introduction of the strings. You know, even though they're from a synth, that sounds really good. Adds a really nice layer. And in answer to your question that you didn't ask me yet, Corey, yes, I will do a Hooked on Phonics podcast with you.
Thank you. I need it desperately. And I should call out Russ Irwin, the keyboard player on these tours and background vocalist. So coming up to the guitar solo, which is always one of my favorite parts of Janie's Got a Gun. Jeff, John, do you want anything to add before we get into it?
Yeah, I was just going to throw out there, and this is probably something you guys talk about every other week, but I always think of Steven Tyler as like a rock and roller, but regardless of like how this song is coming across tone-wise, he's a bluesy guy, a very, very blues-heavy voice, mm-hmm. And I think I forget that sometimes.
Very heavy blues-influenced band, and Steven, absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You hear that a lot in their music too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why like my favorite bands tend to be very bluesy. Whether it's Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin, like they're very blues at their core. Mm-hmm. And you know, I keep going back to the bass on this one. You know, it's the night of the bass man, and he's coming forward for me in this mix.
Sorry, buddy, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that the tone he's getting on the bass is fantastic. It really does cut through, but his performance is so precision. You really couldn't ask for anything better from the bass on this one.
And Tom Hamilton's been that way since the beginning to today when he's out there playing, like just mm-hmm. One of the most underrated bass players in rock and roll is Tom Hamilton. All right, we'll go to Scott right away here, but I don't know. To me, that solo section was not as tight as it was on the studio recording. It was kind of sloppy, a little bit all over the place, and then you got Steven just kind of caterwauling over top of it just to remind everybody that he's there, and I was never a big fan of that.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things that strike me. The first half of the solo was very muddy. All of a sudden, there's just this big wash of reverb on the guitar and vocals, which just kind of seemed weird that it's, you know, if it was just on the vocal and not the guitar, I could see it, I guess, but that was kind of strange. So I really didn't get to hear what the first half of the solo was. The second half wasn't too bad. It fit the song, but I definitely heard much better work come from him. And Steven, just stop it. Like, this is not the song to be doing some kind of vocal excited celebration. That I don't feel that fit the song at all.
This is more typical of what I picture Janie's Got a Gun Live to sound like. You know, everything's just a little bit sloppy. It's not as tight as the studio version. It's a song built for the studio. I echo a lot of the things I said at the top of the show. You know, it's not Joe at his best. It's not Steven at his best. I don't know what it is about this song, but it doesn't feel like the band is ever on the same playing field when they play it.
Now, Jeff, you're a big Spoons player. What did you think about the musicianship in that solo section?
Well, I mean, I'm no professor of music or anything, but that last part did sound a little jacked.
She got a gun. She got a gun. Oh, well, it's just begun. Body is on the run. Tell me now, it's untrue. She is last out.
Now, that's the other controversial lyric. I'm sure we mentioned it on the studio version, but she had to take him down easy and put a bullet in his brain. The radio edit is actually she had to take him down easy and left him in the pouring rain.
Oh, I love American radio. You know, it's always amazing the things that that we can and can't say in a quote unquote free society. Yeah, I don't know. Musically, I have to wonder if maybe the band themselves don't like the song. They know they have to play it because it, you know, has a certain status, and they're just not into doing it.
It's an interesting comment because there are times in this version where I don't feel like they're into doing it. So I kind of agree with that. What do you think, Jeff?
I think for the most part, to me, and this is with my
expert ears.
For most of it, it sounded pretty good, especially for a live song, because you don't always know what you're going to get when you're listening to a live performance. For most of this, it sounded pretty good. It kind of felt like it went a little off the rails there, that last section or last couple of sections. But I don't know. We'll see how they finish it up.
Okay, that Steven try too hard right there. All over that. Just like that sounded like me at a karaoke night trying to sing this song. Right? Like there was, you know, all due respect to Steven Tyler, one of the great performers and singers of all time. Whatever the hell that was right there, almost sounded like he forgot the lyrics and remembered them the very last second and just said them to get them out. So that way it's like, oh, I'm hitting all my marks and checked all those boxes. And that's about it.
I feel like on that last break we took, I said, let's see how this is going to wrap up. And thinking that, you know, it might clean up and get better. And then Steven was like, oh yeah, watch this.
Well, you know, and John said, apologies to Steven Tyler. How about apologies to John Mariano, one of the better karaoke singers I've ever heard in my life.
I'm very tempted to fly out to New York and take John out for a couple of beers at karaoke and get him liquored up enough to do this song. I don't know if there's enough liquor in New York for that to happen, but I'm tempted to give it a shot.
Oh, would you ever do this one in karaoke, John?
Would I? I'll do anything, you know, if there's money on the table.
There you go.
I hate that we did not go to karaoke.
We know what we're doing for show 100. We're either getting Scott to New York or John to Las Vegas. And we're going to do some karaoke. And you know what? I have a feeling this next section, Steven's going to be struggling as well.
I'm just glad to know that no matter what it is, John has a price for everything.
Literally everything.
I grew up watching wrestling, and Million Dollar Man taught me everyone has a price.
It's true.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to make this a pick on Steven episode, but he sounds right now. Did you guys see the Super Bowl a couple of years ago when The Weeknd was in that mirror maze?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So he sounds like The Weeknd lost in the mirror maze right now singing the song.
It's a good analogy. Yeah. I was actually thinking about stopping the song to talk about the drums. You know, I'm normally a huge fan of melodic drums, but I really kind of feel like he doesn't care about this song either. He's just hitting random toms at different pitches that don't really seem to have any kind of flow to them. Almost like I just got to do so. I got to hit something and doesn't really know what he wants to do. I feel like everyone's so disconnected from the song except for the bass and the keys.
And Brad Whitford, I think, on the rhythm guitar, I think he's right in there, too. There was a cool role that Joey did early. I can't remember where it was. I forgot to point it out then, but it's the complete opposite of what he's doing here. Like you said, he's just kind of randomly. It's like when I get behind a drum set, I'm like, and I'm hitting a random tom here and then a cymbal or something. So,
yeah, early I was going to make the comment about how good the drums were, and now I feel like I really wish I'd have said it when I thought it, because we're not there anymore.
Ditto. Like I said, I heard that roll. I'm like, oh, I should point that out. That was a really cool little roll that wasn't on the studio version that he put on this one. It was during one of the transitions. And yeah, it's now it's all I hear is dun, 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 dun,
dun. Right.
That last roll was all right.
That one wasn't bad, but I think Steven, it really sounds like he's just exhausted. I mean, there's no enunciation. It's just like sounds coming out of his mouth at this point. I don't know where in the set this song appears, but this would probably be a good time for them to do the movie and give him a break.
Exactly. That's where you need a really kick-ass instrumental. I'm so glad we have that on the mixtape. All right, Janie's Got a Gun from Little South of Sanity. If this came from 97, this would have been sandwiched between Taste of India and Last Child, right around song 11. So kind of mid-set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sounds way too exhausted for being that early in the show. And I really like how they got the one corner of the crowd where they held up the applause sign to record.
Yeah, no, it's typical of them of this era. And I tell how great they are as a live band so much on the show. And this is one of the songs I was dreading, you know, that we would have to cover one day, because this is my least favorite song they do live. And they play it a lot because it's a hit, but it's this, and I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, you know, I actually prefer hearing I Don't Want to Miss a Thing live.
Wow.
Because at least Steven's more into that one than even this one. This is just Aerosmith by the numbers, and the numbers don't add up.
All right, so Janie's Got a Gun. This is a live track, so this would go on the live side B of our double mixtape, which currently has 3, 6, 7 songs on it. So we got 2 slots. So we have to really hate this version and not even put it on there, because we could put it on there and not lose anything. The current songs on the side B live track side are Sweet Emotion from A Little South of Sanity, Mother Popcorn from Live Bootleg, What It Takes from A Little South of Sanity, Lord of the Thighs from Live Bootleg, Toys in the Attic from Classics Live 2, and then a couple of cuts from Classics Live 1, Kings and Queens, and Train Kept a Rollin'. So the question is, did we like this version of Janie's Got a Gun enough to put it in one of the empty slots on the live track side, or do we just turf it all together? Jeff, you are our guest. What did you think about this song, and does it deserve a spot on our Ultimate Aerosmith mixtapes?
Okay, so I actually like Janie's Got a Gun. It's one of the Aerosmith songs that I know and that I can sing along to. The live version, I think like about the first half of it, other than the intro, sounded pretty good. But then a lot of it just kind of felt like it was, like you guys said a while ago, like everyone was kind of doing their own thing. I kind of halfway expected Steven Tyler there near the end to borrow Shumala Dumity Bop from David Lee Roth, because he was kind of doing all kinds of stuff there. Yeah. I don't know that I would put this on there, guys. I think that I would save that spot.
All right, so that is one no vote from Jeff Saunders. Scott, what did you think?
I'm disappointed because I was really hoping that with a live version, they might win me over on the song, and they started out okay. I could forgive the water harp intro, but they really just, this was just not a good performance. And what's really interesting is we've covered two other songs from this live album, which I very much liked. So it wasn't like it was an off night for them. I don't know if this was actually a compilation of like two or three nights and they just picked the best versions or what, but it was certainly a good time in their performing for me. So the fact that I didn't like it, I think, is a bigger disappointment. But you said it wouldn't hurt us if we put this. I think it would. I think this is a horrible version to say it belongs on the tape, even though we do have open slots. I don't think anybody looking at our mixtape as it is right now would be served by this being on there. So I would say no.
Okay, that's 0 for 2 for this live version of Jenny's Got a Gun. John Mariano, what are your thoughts?
I mean, we have those two slots, and if we use one of them on this song, then we have the ability to very quickly take this song off. On the other hand, I really like believing that the movie is the worst song on the mixtape. And I cannot, in good conscience, put this song on the mixtape and still feel that way. So with that, I'm sorry, but I have to keep that slot empty.
All right. So my vote is academic. It's a 3 against, but I would vote the same. I kind of liked what some of the band members were doing on this version, but not enough to justify it taking up a spot on side B of our mixtape. There is another live version we could break out at some point from the Rocks Donington 2014 compilation. Scott's very excited about that. And that's, you know, this was, say, you know, 97, 98 Aerosmith. This is, we're talking 2014 Aerosmith. So if Steven was struggling late 90s with this song, imagine how he sounds 2014. I haven't listened to a lot of the Rocks Donington live album. I think I played it like once or twice, so I can't tell you what my initial thoughts of that live version are, but look, we do have one more version that we can get out here. Also on that album is a live version of I Don't Want to Miss a Thing for a certain member of the panel who would love to hear that song once again. So, John, you got another opportunity to hear it.
You know what? I have a good feeling that I'm going to enjoy it more than either one version of the live Jenny's Got a Gun.
That's very true. I really liked your comment, John, about just, you know, it's a tough song maybe to translate live. It's the studio version, I think, is an all-time classic. But to translate that in a live setting, very, very difficult. And they did not do a good job of transferring it here. So, Jenny's Got a Gun from A Little South of Saturday, not on the mixtape. That'll wrap it up for this show. But before we go, Jeff, one more time, tell us quickly about St. Baldrick's and how the folks can donate and help out.
Yes. So St. Baldrick's Foundation, we're helping them raise money to fund childhood cancer research so that these kids can get better treatments and potential cures for all the childhood cancers out there. We're collecting donations through stbaldricks.org. You can go on there. You can look up Shaving Lives 2023 if you want to donate through our team. Or you can just donate there on the homepage to St. Baldrick's. And then all this is going to culminate. And on on March 3rd and 4th, we're going to have a couple of head shaving events, and we're going to go bald for the cause.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Jeff, for bringing that to everybody's attention and for coming on the show here tonight. It was always a pleasure. And even though you pick a lot of bad songs, tonight was an interesting one. So thank you very much for coming on and talking about a great Tom Hamilton tune. Scott Haskin, maybe let's tell the folks about the Deep Dive Podcasting Network.
our ever growing list of shows is ever growing. And in addition to this show, which you've been listening to, Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited, John and Corey also do another show called Backtracks Theme Music. And then Mark Kammeyer, along with Corey, does a show called And the Podcast Will Rock, which is all things Van Halen. I do a show called Uriah Heep, The Magician's Podcast. And then we have the Deep Purple Podcast, the Skinnerd Reconsidered Podcast. Terry T-Bone Mathley does an interview show called T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the Other Side. We have the Sabbath Bloody Podcast, In the Lap of the Pods, a Queen show. Andy and Mac at Hawk Binge, which is all about Hawkwind, which has just announced a new album coming out, which is really exciting. We have Maiden A to Z, Diary of the Mad Men, the Ultimate Ozzy Podcast, Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, the Judas Priest Cast. We have a show called North by South Podcast, which is contrasting and comparing a song from North America, one from the United States, and one from Canada, which is interesting because we could actually do that same kind of thing on this show. Sure. We have So Far, So Pod, So What, a Megadeth podcast. We have the Tom Petty Project, Seaside Pod Review, another Queen show. We have And Volume for All and the Rock Roulette podcast.
Awesome shows. Awesome job. Thank you very much, Scott Haskin, and great job on the new season of the Magician's Podcast. I'm really enjoying your shows and the new album, Uriah Heep album. It's really, really good stuff. John Mariano.
They hit number four in Germany, which is the highest they've ever been. The second highest was they hit number 10 with Demons and Wizards back in 72. So their brand new album is setting the charts on fire.
Awesome. Huge in Germany, just like our show. We chart very well in Germany. It's all because of John Mariano. John, maybe let's tell the folks about our good buddy, Ken Knapsack.
I gladly will. So Ken Knapsack has a bunch of shows on the Knapsack Network. The big thing he's pushing right now is The Blathering. The Blathering is all of Ken's thoughts on all things everywhere. It's an off-the-cuff, from-the-heart-and-head podcast from Ken. And the key word there is heart. And I say the key word there is heart because knowing Ken, as I do, and as we all do, Ken would like to take some of his time right now and really push Jeff's cause with St. Baldrick's. Because there is nothing more important to Ken than that. So while I'm pushing Ken and Ken's podcast, and go, you know, check it out, you know, look for The Blathering, listen to Ken, but there is nothing more important to Ken than Jeff and the St. Baldrick's cause, and it's St. Baldrick's throughout the year. So even though Jeff is right now pushing this event that's happening around the release of this show, St. Baldrick's is all year round, folks. So if you don't have the money to donate now, you can donate later in the year. You can donate next year. You can just tell your friends, tell your family, you know, get the word out. There are so many different ways you can help. And helping these children is so important. So while we're here, we're doing this podcast, we're promoting each other, we're promoting our friends, but we're really here promoting helping these kids. So whatever you can do today to go and help these kids, whether it's reaching in your pocket, reaching out to loved ones, just reaching out to somebody and saying that you love them and you think about them, whatever you're doing in any small way, putting some good back into the world right now is important. And that's really what this episode's about today. So just be kind to each other.
Well said, my friend. I certainly can't improve on that at all, just to say ditto. And with that, let's wrap it up. On behalf of Scott Haskin, John Mariano, and the wonderful Jeff Saunders, my name is Corey Morset. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, we'll give the last word to Steven Tyler.